Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Always good to join you at the end of the week where, like, a bit more, numbers. Well, I guess the computer has a mind of its own. Once again, happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. And, of course, today is Friday, December the 13th. So I guess that is our glitch for the evening. Hopefully that's it. I welcome you to my program. Always good to catch up with you at the end of the week, right in the middle of holiday season. Hanukkah has just ended. Christmas is on the horizon. I hope everyone enjoying all of the holidays are indeed having a good holiday this apparently cold middle of December. For those of you who are new to the program, I am a retired senior special agent with the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I have taken my show on the road, so to speak, ever since those horrific attacks of 9/11 carried out by terrorists from the Middle East, foreign nationals, or as the law says, aliens, who managed to game the visa process, game the immigration benefits program, the system by which aliens are accorded all sorts of status, whether it's lawful immigrant status, U.S. citizenship, political asylum, the authority to work in the United States, the authority to go to school. Because I had a front row seat for 30 years to the lunacy that was the old INS, and I can tell you it's only gotten worse. The so-called Department of Homeland Security, DHS, so dysfunctional, so unable to carry out its most fundamental tasks, both intentionally and unintentionally, that I've given DHS the nickname the Department of Homeland Surrender. I believe in truth and advertising, and that is truthful. But it is in large measure because of the direction that this administration is taking this country. You know, sometimes you have to look at a situation and say, no, you can't be that screwed up out of stupidity. It has to be willful, and indeed it is. This administration, aided and abetted by members of Congress from both sides of the aisle, are creating incentives, encouragement, inducement, aiding and abetting aliens to violate the laws that were enacted pardon me, many years ago, with two primary goals: protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American workers. Maybe there's a political equation here. We know that hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent by some very powerful and wealthy lobbyists from a variety of industries, a variety of sectors, because they want that human tsunami to continue to crash on America's shores, and they seem to be absolutely uncaring of the impact that this has for America and Americans. It's hardly a conservative issue. It is, however, an American issue. And so ever since 9/11, I realized that my perspectives were worth sharing with my fellow Americans, with our supposed leaders, with those journalists, few as they might be, who are truly willing to listen and take appropriate action. And that is often the focus of my programs. Of course, we do get into other issues, but primarily my concern, and I suspect your concern, is national security, public safety, and the future of America and Americans, and indeed the middle class. So that's why I'm here. If you want to learn a little bit more about me, my perspectives, my observations, I got two great websites I want you to go to, so get out your crayons and write it down. Please go to Michael Cutler, one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, I'm very happy to tell you I am a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, and I got to tell you, on a cold evening such as we're experiencing in New York, I envy them their weather and their beautiful city. I've been there a number of times. Great people out there, great friends out there. And they certainly are in the right place in the country this evening, even though I know that they're chilly out there, and they're probably freezing as they wear their traditional flip-flops right there on the Pacific coast. So for those of you in that climate, I hope you're enjoying it as we continue to freeze our heinies off here in New York City. But it's always good to join you. By the way, their website is capsweb.org. Please visit it. They've got a number of my articles up on their website. And they've added something really cool to their website, and I really like it. It was something that I asked them to do, and some others of us who write for them asked them to do. You can go to their website and click on the link of each author, each of the fellows, contributors, and so forth, and you can immediately have access to all the articles, the whole library of what each of us who write for them have written. Some people focus on other aspects of the issues that that agency or that organization is concerned with. My area of expertise and my area of concern is that of immigration and the impact that this is having on just about every threat and challenge America faces today. I'm expecting my good friend Lauren Martell to be joining me shortly. I understand that she is at a dinner party or is headed to one, but said she would stop by, at least metaphorically, through the magic of a telephone and join us for a little bit. But forgive me for this frog in my throat that doesn't want to seem to go away. I think it has something to do with the New York weather, the New York chill. I watched a hearing yesterday, and it was quite unusual, quite astounding. As you may know, and again, go to my website, you'll get to see some of this stuff I've written. But I've testified before something like 16 congressional hearings. Some of them are very well attended. Some of them are very worthwhile. Others can be, as my wife once described, a travesty. I wish they had listenings in Washington rather than hearings. I can't tell you how often I have sat at that witness table and wanted to stand up and ask them a simple question, can you hear me now? Well, yesterday there was a very important hearing conducted by the House Judiciary Committee. And the House Judiciary Committee is one of the most powerful of the committees on the Hill. There are a lot of committees, but judiciary is super important. Think about it. The courts are under their jurisdiction, under their oversight. The FBI, DEA, U.S. Marshal Service, Bureau of Prisons, there are components of immigration under their control or under their oversight. Law enforcement in general comes under the aegis, primarily, of the Judiciary Committee. They and Homeland Security are supposed to make certain that there is real integrity to the way we do business at all those agencies. And in fact, my most recent hearing was for the counterpart in the Senate Judiciary Committee. But so often those hearings last about 2 hours, lots of interruptions, the members have to go vote, whether they're senators or members of Congress, the bell rings and everybody runs, that is to say the elected representatives run to vote, and you have to hope that they vote in our own best interest. It's something when they do, unfortunately not as often as we'd like. But the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, he's new to the chairmanship, he's a good guy, his name is Bob Goodlatte. So they held this hearing, and Bob began it with his own statement, and then he handed over the gavel to another real leader in Washington. And it's funny, I'm mentioning names that are Republicans. I'm a registered Democrat. Nobody should vote a party line. And if you're listening to my program, I'm willing to bet, if I could see a raising of hands, that very few of you are dopey enough to vote a party line. Always, always, always vote for the candidate, never the party. I believe that both parties are really the major part of the problem that we face. Politicians cannot represent their constituents when party leadership wants them to go in a different direction. It is a very untenable situation, and so many times these folks are pressured beyond words to give to the party what the party wants, not what the constituent wants. And there's some notable exceptions. I hope he's listening this evening. Lou Barletta is certainly one of my few heroes on Capitol Hill. He used to be the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Congressman Barletta got sued, or Mayor Barletta got sued when he enacted immigration ordinances, first mayor in the entire country to do this, because he got no backup from the Immigration Service. In fact, he tells the story, and I was with him. I was privileged to join him on stage a couple of months ago at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. Mark Bernier, the radio talk show host, provided me with an airplane ticket and a hotel room. And if Mark is listening, I certainly appreciated that opportunity. We went out to Florida, and we did an 80-minute presentation on stage, answered questions. It was covered by C-SPAN. It's permanently posted. And we got into a discussion about the nexus between immigration and national security. And you would never even know that immigration had anything to do with national security by those statements made by the administration, by the statements made by members of Congress, whether it's Chuck Schumer or Harry Reid or John McCain, you know, both sides of the aisle. The lunacy that is being foisted on us by allegedly a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, as Lincoln said, not so much where those knuckleheads are concerned. It's infuriating and it's dangerous. So I was Lou's final witness when he was sued by the ACLU and the trial that followed, and he has... I have worked with him, helped him any way that I could. I mean, he's really leading the charge, and Lou is amazing. And you really need to watch that 80-minute video, and you need to pass along the link to as many people as you know, because it's difficult getting the message out there. Other than Neil Cavuto, who has me on fairly frequently, and not that long ago I was on with the lovely Megyn Kelly over at Fox. The other networks, CNN, Fox News, they are not covering this issue the way it really needs to be covered. So thank God that Neil and Megyn are doing it. They don't do it often enough. I wish they would cover this more frequently. I hope they will in the coming year. But I will tell you that the best solution is the Internet. It's programs such as my own. It's the fact that we could be covered by C-SPAN, and C-SPAN has this permanently posted. You need to understand the purpose behind immigration. This isn't about discriminating. It's not about racism. It's not about bigotry. It's simply about keeping people out of our country who would do harm to us. It's no different from the responsible homeowner or person who rents an apartment who looks through the peephole when a stranger knocks on the door, rings the bell. In a point of fact, that's why they put a peephole on a door, so that you can make a decision as to whether or not to let a stranger into your home. This is common sense. It's not rocket science. It's not complicated. Perhaps administering the law properly becomes complicated. But the goal has to be, first and foremost, protect the lives and the jobs of Americans. Not difficult at all. And in fact, I'm working on a major article that will appear in the next edition. I believe it will be the winter edition of The Social Contract. And it's all about the death of the middle class, how it's about to be put on the endangered species list if it's not there already. So anyway, yesterday's hearing called by the House Judiciary Committee and also by the House Immigration Subcommittee, and it's a subcommittee of the Judiciary, immigration is, and the topic was asylum abuse, is it overwhelming our borders? And this hearing went on for about 3.5 hours. Many of the members were in attendance. Sheila Jackson Lee was there. There were others there. I know Sheila. She called me for two hearings, even though she's a liberal Democrat. In fact, it was Sheila Jackson Lee who invited me to testify on the issue of how two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, back in March of 2002, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school. That's how dysfunctional we are. 6 months to the day after 9/11, the whole world knew that these two dirtbags were A, terrorists, and B, dead. The old INS, the Imitation and Neutralization Service, as I came to call it back then, went ahead and sent them letters of authority to change school. And I know that there are people who were executives there, and, oh, they'll say, no, you're getting it wrong. The letters were delayed. They went out. Listen, my dog ate my homework, okay? This is as dysfunctional as Obamacare on steroids, and it has huge, super huge national security implications. So they held this hearing. I was disappointed that they talked about overwhelming our borders. And then, by the way, I see that Lauren is here, so let me get a hold of Lauren. Lauren Martell, happy Friday. I was just off on a rant about yesterday's hearing. I don't know if you saw it. Thank you for joining me this Friday the 13th.
I know. I'm always so excited to come on your radio show and talk some, you know, cutting-edge issues of the day. What's the topic today?
Well, besides the fact that you're here, that makes it a topic all by itself. And I'm sure where you are at Hilton
Head. What could possibly go wrong now?
No, but you're stealing my line. Isn't that true, though?
Right.
What could possibly go wrong? And as they would say with the Yiddish accent, don't ask. Don't ask.
You know, I'm going to have to say that because I think I told you tonight that I'm actually at a friend's birthday party, and she immigrated from Russia 20 years ago
and went
to law school.
My father's family came from there.
And she absolutely – well, I'll have to get you in touch with Jane, and, you know,
sure.
You guys will have to meet and talk. But she she's having a little birthday party, and so I'm one of the only ones that is not either Russian or Jewish or both. And I love it. It's great. America is such a wonderful place where we can have so many different kinds of people that love America. And that's what's the beautiful thing of these guys is that they just really love America.
Well, that's right. You know, this isn't about xenophobia. I hear this all the time. Oh, you just hate immigrants. My mother, may she rest in peace, was an immigrant. She came here ahead of the Holocaust. She was a teenage girl, lived in a rooming house by herself. Imagine coming to a strange country. Left her mother behind forever, living in a rooming house in a strange country, didn't really know the language, worked in an umbrella factory for $3 a week, scared out of her mind, and that was my mom. So, you know, she came legally, by the way. I have to underscore that. But the point is what gives America its strength and its vibrancy and what makes it such an amazing country is we are the most diverse country, and I don't want to change that. I just want to make sure there's some common sense involved as to who we open the door for.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I think the audience here tonight would agree to that, too. They all did it legally and went through all of the requirements. And I think that that really, you know, makes it even more of a treasure to be, you know, to be here.
Do you remember Groucho Marx?
Yes.
He had a wonderful saying.
Yes, I just mentioned something, yeah.
He said, I wouldn't want to belong to an organization that would have me as a member. And when you look at the way we're devaluing citizenship and legal immigration, you know, I keep thinking about old Groucho with that cigar.
Yeah, well, they did something called the Sanity Clause, too. I'll have to send you the clip on that. It's hysterical. They basically keep ripping apart the contract until they get down to the Sanity Clause, and it's pretty funny. And basically it says, if this is insane or you're insane, you really don't have to abide by this contract anyway, and so it's null and void. And I kind of feel that way a little bit about Obamacare in a way. But
I feel that way about everything in a way. You know, and I was thinking about that poor woman. If you remember when they were having that meeting to try to get that budget agreement signed, and the clerk, that young lady or that middle-aged lady, I'm calling her young lady, although compared to me, everyone seems to be getting younger and younger, had a meltdown, and they had to basically cart her off because I was talking to somebody joking and said, you know, the way you guys are doing business in Congress, maybe they need to hang padding on the wall. Then she reminded me about the woman who had the meltdown. I don't know if you remember it. But it really is a crazy place, Washington. But we do have some great leaders, and Trey Gowdy is certainly one of them. I think he's amazing. I've had a couple of conversations with Trey. He really is a good guy. And Bob Goodlatte yesterday, you know, they had this hearing, and I was just starting to talk about it, so let me let you know what I was just talking about. They did a hearing called Asylum Abuses and Overwhelming Our Borders. And I was disappointed. They said, oh, my God, they're going to talk just about the borders. So, you know, I wish they had talked about that nobody talked about yesterday, even though they did a 3.5-hour hearing. And I will tell you, that Jason Chaffetz, who joined Gowdy, in fact, Trey deferred to Jason Chaffetz, hammered the hell out of the U.S. government witnesses, the administration's witnesses, because some of the stuff that's going on is insane beyond words. But let me tell you how serious immigration is, folks, because I think everyone has gotten away from the obvious, okay? The 9/11 Commission also had a 9/11 Commission staff. These were lawyers and special agents. I know some of the people that were on the commission, attorneys and so forth. They put together their own report in addition to the 9/11 Commission report. It was called the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel. They did a couple of staff reports. The one on terrorist travel was voluminous. It was almost as big as the 9/11 Commission report, and it addressed purely the immigration components of 9/11. Now think about it, a volume that just focused on immigration, and it was as thick as a phone book. And it starts out with this paragraph at the preface. This set the tone for this entire report by the entire staff. Now listen to this. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we will discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Now, you know what's remarkable to me? I did my very first congressional hearing before the House Immigration Subcommittee, again, but on May 20th, 1997. And you know what's interesting about that date, Lauren? It's almost exactly to the day midway between the attacks of 93 at the CIA and the first World Trade Center bombing and the terror attacks of 9/11. So more than four years before 9/11, here was this hearing conducted by the Republican side. It was Lamar Smith at the time, and Henry Hyde was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, the late Henry Hyde. They're the ones who convened that hearing looking at visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud because of the two terror attacks. And they said, you know, there's a real vulnerability here, and we need to get to the heart of it. So I was one of a number of people called down to Washington, and the old INS, the commissioner back then, Doris Meisner, tried every tactic in the world to keep me and another immigration agent that I arranged to have join me down there testify. And eventually, my understanding was that Congressman Smith told Meisner, hey, listen, we're not going to issue Mr. Cutler or the other gentleman a subpoena. We'll let them not come to this hearing if you don't release them, because I was an employee and the government had to release me to testify. But he said, if you don't, you better understand that within weeks we will issue him a subpoena and he will be the sole witness and we will hammer him with the questions that you don't want him to answer. It was the old JFK line, when you have someone by the short hairs and yank, their heart is short to follow. Well, let me tell you, he had a grip on those short hairs, and he was yanking pretty hard. And I just sat there waiting for the phone call. And 2 hours later, the phone rang, and I was told by the folks in Washington, you're coming to Washington tomorrow morning. Can you imagine?
Wow. Well, that's people who are smart are going to call you on this. And I'll have to tell you, it's reassuring to hear that Trey Gowdy is doing a good job. You know, he has a legal background about, you know, asking the right questions.
Well, he was a federal prosecutor, and he has every bit the air about him as a federal prosecutor. You know, I was an agent for 26 years, and I spent 4 years before that as an inspector. I worked with a bunch of federal prosecutors, and in my world, if you called up Central Casting and said, send a savvy, tough SOB of a prosecutor down to this event, Trey Gowdy would probably show up. He has the demeanor and the perspective of that tough prosecutor.
Yeah, and so it is, again, reassuring, you know, because we in South Carolina like to keep our politicians accountable, and, you know, we have a tendency in America today to just kind of elevate politicians up on a pedestal, and really what we have to remember is that they work for us, and it is really our job, as if you were, you know, the boss of any sort of small business or franchise. We really have a duty to make sure that things are functioning the way they're supposed to. And when they're not, it's up to us, the people, to get involved. And
well, we're lousy employers, though. Let me tell you, we are lousy employers. When you look at the people we keep keeping on their job, imagine if you had a company, you had an employee who came to work an hour late, took a three-hour lunch, stole stuff out of the supply cabinet, and thumbed his nose at you when you complained that he was only working a four-hour day but getting paid for 10 hours. That's what's happened with too many congressmen around the country today, but not Gowdy. I got to tell you, you guys in South Carolina are getting representation. And I will tell you that the folks in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, you're getting representation from Lou Barletta. And the folks in Alabama, Jeff Sessions. And in Iowa, you got Chuck Grassley. There are some really good people, Steve King in Iowa. You have some good people. And again, I'm going to say it. I'm registered as a Democrat, and I haven't mentioned a single Democrat. There are a couple. There's few of them, but there are some there, too. But we've got to stop voting party lines. We've got to look at individuals and ask yourself, are they beholden to the constituents or primarily to the party? Because if they're putting the party above you, they need to go. If they're putting the powerful lobbyists ahead of you, they need to go. And Gowdy and Chaffetz, and I was surprised because you know what Gowdy did yesterday? I don't know if did you see the hearing yesterday?
No, I was in my own court hearing, like, almost all day yesterday.
I'll tell you what happened. Bob Goodlatte started out as chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He talked about something known as Texas Hold'em, which was an operation done on the Texas border because they found that they were being inundated by illegal aliens from Brazil. So what they did was to focus on them. So they made a point of arresting everyone that they could find and doing whatever they could do to move them back to Brazil. And in short order, the flood stopped. And I said, you know, this is the first time in I don't know how long that I heard a member of Congress talk about the benefit of effective enforcement and getting the job done. That is what was lacking from the Senate bill. That is what is lacking from this administration. And I was listening to the witnesses, and here was the rundown of the witnesses. And I'm going to probably mispronounce this woman's name, Lori Scialaba, yeah, I guess that's right, Deputy Director, U.S. Citizenship Immigration Services. She's in charge of political asylum. Daniel Ragsdale, Deputy Director, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and Michael J. Fisher, Chief of the U.S. Border Patrol. And Ruth Wassum, who's neutral. She is a specialist on immigration policy for the Congressional Research Service. She's just a researcher who works for both parties equally. I know of Ruth. I worked with her predecessor and so forth. So it was interesting because here on the one hand, you had Chairman Goodlatte talking about Hold'em and talking about enforcement. And then when Trey Gowdy got to speak, he deferred to Jason Chaffetz. I don't know the last time I saw that happen.
See, it's awesome. He came up with that when he was trying to interrogate Hillary Clinton about Benghazi, too, because this is why they can't get any – the good guys have trouble getting anything done is because when they're in these big interrogations or investigations or hearings, they only have 5 minutes, and then they have to go back and forth. So there's a Republican, a Democrat. So what Trey, I believe, I don't know if he was the actual person who thought this up, but he was definitely participated in it when they were trying to get Hillary Clinton to answer questions. If you can't follow a line of questions more than 5 minutes, it's very easy for the person on the other side of the questions, the one who's supposed to be answering them, to divert and distract and wait for the Democrat to ask a sillier question that goes down another rabbit hole that actually never ends up ultimately getting to the bottom line of what the question is. You know, the truth of what the question's seeking. So one of those guys came up, and it's brilliant, where they just yield to the gentleman. You know, actually in the Benghazi thing, they kept yielding to Trey Gowdy. So, you know, the next guy, Republican, that was up would say, I yield to the gentleman from South Carolina. And it is a good way. It's just such a sad day and age. You think about how our founding fathers deliberated for hours and didn't have a, you know, cooking time clock that would buzz off after 5 minutes when they're in the middle of an amazing...
I'm familiar with the time clock. But he deferred immediately to Jason Chaffetz and said, you know, this is the guy that's been doing so much work. But it was clear later on just how knowledgeable and focused Trey himself was also. They were really the dynamic duo at that hearing yesterday, I have to tell you. And it was interesting because one of the things that I've always said that they need to focus on is how do they conduct interviews? How do they conduct background investigations? How do they evaluate the employees that have to do the adjudications? And between the dynamic duo of Chaffetz and Gowdy, let me tell you, it became rapidly apparent that the whole thing is a bunch of smoke. The interview for political asylum is generally, believe it or not, a 20-minute interview, according to this woman, Lori Scialaba, and she said they did most of the interviews telephonically, and it took no more than 20 minutes. And
crazy.
I mean, that was astonishing. That was astonishing.
Hey, Mike, I have to tell you, I wish I could be on for the whole hour, but it really is my friend's birthday, and just because I love you so much, I wanted to call in and engage and tell you that I'm thinking about you, and I'll be looking forward to doing a full hour in the near future. But
okay.
I kind of have to go. It looks like the next round of entree stuff is coming out. So
eat some of that good stuff for me, would you please?
Yes. I wanted to introduce you and have her speak Russian, but she's not really good on live radio right now. But so I said that I'm going to have you guys get in contact soon so that you can meet her. And she can tell you some of her stories, and, you know, she and you can talk about her. So it's really interesting.
What part of Russia was she from? Do you know?
No, I don't, actually. So I'll get you
okay.
connected, but... One of the things that I want to talk to you about eventually is what happened in Wichita today, or was it yesterday, with the airport.
Yep.
So that's maybe an issue that we can save, or you can move into that one. Because I think
I will get to it, but for those of you not knowing what happened, there was an engineer, a guy that works on avionics on airliners, which is really scary. I mean, think how he could have screwed up an airplane if he didn't decide he was going to blow up something. But
he
is a convert to radical Islam.
TSA for that.
I'm sorry?
I said he. You don't have to worry about TSA because, I mean, this guy would go undetected. He's not flying. He just works for the airport. So
No. But he still had
TSA
to go through security. But no. But again, this is one of the dangers of profiling because he doesn't fit any profile of anybody you would be concerned about. He converted to Islam from Christianity, I believe. And he never changed his name, apparently. But, you know, the question also is, I mean, if you read his statements, I mean, the guy really seems to, you know, I don't think his elevator is going to the top floor. But, you know, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, if somebody becomes motivated to do something horrific, we've got a serious problem. And you know, I keep saying it's not just about New York. This was in Wichita, Kansas, folks. The entire country is the potential playground for people who want to kill lots of Americans. And that was why when I was at one of my hearings...
On that note, I'm going to go carpe diem. I'm going to go seize the night, carpe diem, carpe diem. And I'm going to go...
And seize the birthday cake, too, while you're at it.
Yeah, and I will catch up with you very soon.
Let's try to talk over the weekend, Lauren. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. You know, there goes Lauren. She's gone. You know, here's the point, though. This was going to be a truck bombing. Thank God this guy wound up speaking with somebody who was connected to the FBI, and so the public wasn't at risk. But Wichita, Kansas, at the airport, he was going to take a truck bomb and do some very serious damage when the terminal was most crowded. You cannot take comfort and say, well, if I'm not in New York and if I'm not in Washington, I have nothing to fear. Look at the Boston Marathon bombing, which, by the way, was carried out by the two Tsarnaev brothers, also from Russia, who got political asylum initially. And that's why political asylum is so critically important. So in any event, the point that was made at the hearing, though, was, and again, this was by Trey Gowdy and by Jason Chaffetz, I'm trying to think of his first name. Old age is a marvelous thing. They went after this issue in broader terms about how this is really a major danger. Now, what got them to hold the hearing was they discovered, to their horror, that members of the Mexican cartel were being granted political asylum in the United States. In fact, most of the cases are coming out of Central America these days. Not Europe, not Russia, but apparently there's tons coming out of El Salvador and some other countries in Latin America. Point that really needs to be made, and this was the thing I was trying to get people to focus on, is just how dangerous political asylum and deficiencies in the overall immigration system are. But as I say, the one thing that I wish had been brought out, and I know they're planning to do a series of hearings, is the nexus between the findings of the 9/11 Commission and political asylum and immigration benefits. Let me read two more brief paragraphs to you that come from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. I want you to think about this the next time some congressman talks about the rights of people who violate our borders. I want you to understand that those laws and our borders first and foremost exist to protect Americans at work and American lives. And this is national security, folks. You know, in a very real manner of speaking, our military, whether it's the Army, the Air Force, the Marines, the Coast Guard, doesn't matter. They're also involved with border security, except they secure our borders externally from a distance because their goal is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. How in the world can you keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible when you have unknown millions of people living inside the United States, no way of knowing who they are, no way of knowing why they're here? It's very daunting, very disturbing. So with that in mind, let me just read these two quick paragraphs. This was actually on page 47 of the 9/11 Commission staff report. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. That was also known, by the way, as the Special Agricultural Program. And by the way, Chuck Schumer was one of the key architects of that in the 86 law. And guess what? It's an S-744 once again. Never mind that we found terrorists who could easily game that process and lie. Doesn't matter. They can lie. We're not going to investigate them. We're not even going to interview them in person. That was one of the things that came out during the conversation that I had with Congressman Barletta when we went to Embry-Riddle University. I made the point while we were on stage that they don't have the capacity to interview all these people that would be applying for amnesty under S-744, and there's no resources to do any field investigations. And Lou absolutely verified it. He said that he'd been at a hearing with then head of DHS, Janet Napolitano, was testifying, and he asked her point blank, yes or no, will you interview the millions of people who would apply to participate in comprehensive reform? And the answer was, no, we're not going to be able to, so we won't. Think about that. To use my friend Lauren's little phrase, what could possibly go wrong? Let me read to you the second little paragraph. This one is on page 98 of that report. This is astonishing. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. 9/11 Commission staff report on terror travel. This wasn't a comic book. It wasn't some tabloid. These were the professionals who worked with the 9/11 Commission to try to find out what in the world went wrong so that we would make certain it doesn't happen again. How in God's name, how in anybody's name, do you then turn around and focus on trying to give unknown millions, maybe tens of millions of illegal aliens who snuck into the country to make sure that we had no record of their being here, because they knew that they belonged to one or more categories of aliens who by law would not be allowed in. And the categories have nothing to do with skin color, nothing to do with ethnicity, nothing to do with race, nothing to do with country of citizenship. Purely about whether or not, and if you look at the law, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, you can find it online. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org. I write about this all the time because it leaves my head spinning like the rotor blades on a helicopter. First and foremost, the law says we have to keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases and aliens with mental illness who are violent or are sex offenders. Remember, with all the breastfeeding we hear from the open borders crowd, the immigration anarchists, as I call them, oh, my God, they've closed Ellis Island. What will we do? What will we do? In point of fact, Ellis Island, folks, was a quarantine station, and they had no problem unceremoniously splitting up families. If the father or the mother, one of the adults, had tuberculosis, had smallpox, whatever, they weren't coming to the United States. They were going home. And if the family wanted to stay as a family unit, then the healthy family members had to go back to the home country with the one that had the illness. There was no exceptions, no games being played, no nothing. You come in, you have to pass muster. You can't be sick, you can't be crazy, you can't be this, and you can't be that. That's why Ellis Island was Ellis Island. It was put in the middle of the bay. The only way to get from Ellis Island to the mainland was on a boat. They did the same thing in California on Angel Island. You know, islands are a great way of isolating people from the mainland. We have Rikers Island, which is a jail here. Okay, they had the Rock, as they called it, out off the west coast in California, Alcatraz. Prisons were ideally placed on islands, so you couldn't get off the island and make your way to the mainland unless the authorities allowed you to. And then, if you look at the law, it talks about aliens who are convicted felons, aliens who are fugitives from justice, aliens who are spies and terrorists and war criminals and human rights violators. And then we get to aliens who would become a public charge or aliens who would work and in so doing compete unfairly with an American worker or by joining the workforce drive down wages or worsen working conditions. It's in the law. So now we have Obama and company saying, oh, we got to change the law. This is about providing cheap labor, folks. There was a recent study done saying that the level of unemployment for computer programmers is higher than most other professions. And yet we're hearing from Gates and Zuckerberg and all those other characters, oh, we don't have enough programmers. No, we do. The problem is they would actually expect a decent wage. By flooding the market with lots of foreign computer programmers who would work for lower wages, we could then drive down the wages that Americans are paid for doing high-skilled jobs. And in case you think I'm making this up, in case you think this is some bad fantasy on my part, you have to recognize the fact that Alan Greenspan was the guy who talked about this when he testified back on April 30th, 2009, before the Senate Immigration Subcommittee. This is the last thing I'm going to read to you this evening. These are not bedtime stories, boys and girls. They're harsh reality. But, you know, the first step in problem solving is to, A, recognize there's a problem, and then, B, identify that problem. So here is what he says about why they need to open the floodgates. This is Alan Greenspan, why we need to open the floodgates and provide tons more of H-1B and other high-tech visas, not just people doing menial work. This is the solid middle class. If you've heard me do this before, I know I'm being repetitious. But if you haven't heard it, take your blood pressure pills because it's about to go up. Now, this is Greenspan. at the Senate Judiciary hearing. And by the way, you can go to the website and watch a hearing of this character saying this. I'm telling you, you need to take blood pressure pills, even if you don't have blood pressure problems. Quoting Greenspan, first, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and in the plunge of value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Now, let me stop and just think about what those words are. He was saying that because so many Americans lost their homes, what he calls housing units, and they lost them to foreclosure, and the value of the real estate went down because of that, well, that was a major issue that he was behind. He was the guy who concocted that scam of the subprime mortgages and provided subprime mortgages to illegal aliens. If you're here illegally and you don't have documentation, that's what undocumented means, then there's no way of really doing a credit check or knowing who you are. And yet they said, oh, we can do that because we're going to spread the risk over a broad area. We'll split that risk up and everything is fine. Well, they couldn't split it up far enough and far apart enough because eventually the whole deck of cards came crashing down. Their house of cards came crashing down. So now what does he say? Let's import house buyers. Let's drive up the price of real estate. So Americans who lost those homes are never going to get back at houses, right? But that's good because we can get foreign people to live in those homes, and we're going to make the houses more expensive. If Americans don't have a house to live in, who cares? The people in the banking industry that we had to bail out with our money, your money and my money, they would make more money by bringing in more high-tech workers. So first and foremost, Greenspan takes care of himself and his banking cronies. Harry Truman was right. Bankers are nobody's friends. Harry said they will only lend you money after you were able to prove that you didn't need it in the first place. You got to love Harry Truman. This is Greenspan again. He said, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Did you catch the term Greenspan used to describe Americans who have skills? The term that he used was privileged elite. Not talking about the CEO of a company who makes 486 times what the average grunt on the production floor earns. No, no, no. I don't know what he thinks those are. His idea of privileged elite are the school teachers and the engineers and the medical technicians, the people who work for a living but have master's degrees, have a real skill. That's the wages that he's going after, what he calls the wage premium. Wage premium, my foot. He's saying, let's cut the wages of Americans. And why would he want to do that? So that profitability for the true privileged elite will go through the stratosphere. This, ladies and gentlemen, is what we are up against. This is why you have this headlong dash for comprehensive reform. I read an article that said that thus far the lobbyists for open borders and amnesty have pumped more than $1.5 billion into the lobbying effort. You know, the government needs a new cabinet-level position, folks. It needs to have the official auctioneer. I sometimes like to watch the Mecum Auto Auction. I like old cars and the old Corvettes and the Ferraris and so forth. And the guy comes on and they have a bidding contest. Well, that's what's happening now. The lobbyists are providing money to campaigns, and the weak-willed and the immoral are going for the money. They're going for the gold. And they are screwing this country left, right, and center. This is a serious problem, folks. So for me, of watching that 3.5-hour hearing yesterday, to watch Chairman Trey Gowdy, Chairman Goodlatte, Congressman Jason Chaffetz hammer and hammer and hammer and hammer on the administration warmed my heart. I was forced to leave my job as an agent for testifying without authority way back right after 9/11. I testified for Tom Tancredo 6 weeks after 9/11 without a subpoena, and the next day I was told, well, you have a messed up leg. I got injured 3 times making arrests. You know, law enforcement is very much a contact sport. Think of the football players getting banged up. Agents are no different, except we don't get to wear all the shoulder pads and everything else. So I ripped my knee up, and I didn't want to stay home. Shortly after I was injured, I wrote a letter to personnel and said, look, I can't chase people. I can't go running up and down flights of stairs. Those days, unfortunately, are in my rearview mirror, but I have 30 years of experience. I could be a prosecution liaison officer. I could do intel work. I was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA for 4 years. I was the first immigration agent assigned there from 1988 to 1991 when I was promoted to senior special agent and assigned to the Drug Task Force. I said, with my background over at Intel, I could do intel work for immigration in New York. I could be a training officer. There's a million jobs I could do because the only part that I injured was my knee. This is not serious. I didn't break my head, fortunately, although my wife might take a different position on that. But the agency said, no, 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 stay home, stay home. And the day after I testified, by special delivery, smoke pouring out of the envelope, I got the word, you're no longer an agent. We need to replace you. And here I thought I couldn't be replaced. So to watch a hearing where the administration's representatives got hammered, where clearly Jason Chaffetz and Trey Gowdy demonstrated the kind of insight that they needed to make the point, it was a thing of beauty, I have to tell you. I was cheering them on every minute that I watched. I hope they hold a lot more hearings, and I hope they keep hammering away at it so that people like John Boehner, who apparently is so concerned about the Chamber of Commerce and all the campaign contributions and all the pressure being applied by those special interest groups, will come to understand that if we are to provide possibly tens of millions of aliens who snuck into the country because they had something to hide and give them identity documents without so much as a face-to-face interview, if you think it makes sense to suddenly millions of workers and put them on an equal footing with unemployed Americans. And the UN, by the way, is cheering this all on from the sidelines because they're predicting that although last year it's estimated that $200 billion with a B got wired out of the United States by foreign workers sending money home, this would increase the amount of money being drained out of our economy. And any economist will tell you there's something called the multiplier effect. That $200 billion at the end of the day has the functional impact of at least $500 billion being added to the national debt. Think about that. Because when you have money in your pocket, you go out and you buy something. And the guy who sold you something now has money in his pocket, so he goes out and he buys something. And that's called the multiplier effect. Money wired out of the country, for all the good it does you, you may as well set fire to it. And on a cold night like we're about to have here in New York, maybe setting fire to that money at least would give us some warmth, because it gives us nothing now when it's wired from the United States to the third world, and that's where it's going. And by the way, the biggest remittance-receiving country is not Mexico. Mexico comes in third. Guess which country is first, folks? India, followed by China. This nonsense that immigration is about Mexico is a subterfuge, and it vilifies Latinos. This is a war against Latinos committed by people who have an agenda, and they're using them as the scapegoat and saying, well, if you want the laws enforced, then you don't like Mexicans. No, I don't like foreigners coming to America who aren't screened. I don't like people coming to America and sending money out of the country by doing jobs that an American should have been doing. I don't like foreign students sitting in a classroom when American kids sit in poverty. You put a kid in a tough neighborhood, and I've been in those neighborhoods as an agent, where there were rats scurrying around in the building and rat droppings everywhere and roaches all over the place. You turn on a light switch and you treat it to something we used to call the moving wall. It looked like the football stands with the fans doing the wave. You live in that kind of squalor and you don't have an opportunity for an education, what are your choices? Unfortunately, all too often, the only alternative to living in squalor is to become involved in gangs and crime. It destroys their lives. It destroys America's underpinnings. First and foremost, the country should be taking care of its own citizens, its own children. When a house fire develops or a boat capsizes, and you see the parent saving their own child first, does anybody have the temerity, the chutzpah, to say, what's wrong with that guy saving his own child first? Of course not. It's common sense. When there's trouble, you save your own first. Yes, if you can go back and save someone else's kid, absolutely you do it. Shame on you if you don't. It would be immoral not to. But before America worries about the plight of illegal aliens, don't you think we should be worrying about the plight of American citizens? And by the way, it's American minority members who are getting hammered the worst. Today, folks, 1 in 4 American children live below the poverty line. And how in the world will suddenly bringing in more high-tech workers and legalizing millions of workers across a broad spectrum of industries help unemployed Americans? This is nuts. It doesn't make sense, and anybody who buys into this argument needs to see if they flunked the wiggle test. And by the way, if somebody asks you what's the wiggle test, just tell them. You stick your left finger in your left ear, you stick your right finger in your right ear, you wiggle your fingertips, and if they touch, folks, you just flunk the wiggle test. And I guarantee you that anybody who buys into this nonsense that comprehensive reform is good for America flunks the wiggle test. You can tell them I said so, whoever you talk to. But really and truly, I was greatly encouraged by yesterday's hearing into asylum. I just hope the next time that perhaps Trey Gowdy or Bob Goodlatte, Jason Chaffetz, makes the point, makes the connection. Hey, listen, this is national security. It's not just about the Mexican cartels getting political asylum or getting lawful status. It's about terrorists. It's about criminals. It goes across the board. The Boston Marathoners, I mean, I want you to think about this. And I believe this question was asked yesterday, too, at the hearing. No tracking of people who get political asylum when they return to their home country. On the one hand, they come in and they say, oh, you can't send me home because the only way that you can get political asylum is if you claim what's known as credible fear. Credible fear means if you send me home, I'm going to face persecution or worse. The Tsarnaev brothers got political asylum along with the rest of their family. And as soon as they got political asylum, you know what they did? They got on an airplane and flew back to Russia. Doesn't that tell you there's something wrong somewhere with that? So these are all the issues that need to look at. They need to look at it because there's far too much at stake here. There's a guy by the name of Fezahazian, and I referenced this guy when I was on with Megyn Kelly over at Fox News on May 2nd, and you can see a video of that if you go to my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. I wrote about it. Fezahazian came here from Eritrea, and when he came from Eritrea, he ran the border, and then according to a Justice Department news release, and in fact ICE had had it on its news on its website previously, when he came to the United States, he claimed political asylum within six months. And it took them all of 6 weeks, believe it or not, all of 6 weeks to grant him political asylum, and he was from Eritrea. Well, as it turns out, the reason they posted this press release was he subsequently caught smuggling African aliens into the United States through Guatemala into the United States through the southern border. The border, we're told, is sort of almost a little bit secure. And I said, wow, this is amazing. The guy obviously lied on his application. They said it right in the press release that Instead of being in Eritrea running for his life as he claimed in his application for asylum, in reality, he was running from the federales in Guatemala. He lied on the application, which means he should have been stripped of his status as a refugee in the United States. Stands to reason he lied. So as I did research and said, you know, I'm sort of familiar with Eritrea. It's a small country. I know it's in Africa. Let me do a little bit of research, because if this country is linked to terrorism, I mean, boy, you want to talk about connecting the dots. This guy was from Eritrea. Obviously, the investigation was fatally flawed. What's Eritrea about? So it took me about 2 minutes doing a Google search. I just love this ability. And there's a British newspaper known as The Telegraph. This article came out roughly at the same time that Mr. Fezhazian was granted political asylum. Let me read this headline and then the sub-headline, you know, the big headline and the smaller headline. You're going to love this, folks. U.S. threatens Eritrea over support for Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists. Boy, that doesn't sound too good, but it gets worse. The U.S. has warned Eritrea it risks American military action for its support of a Somalian terror group linked to a plot to attack President Barack Obama. Okay, so we have an individual who sneaks into the country from clearly a country intimately involved, intrinsically involved in terrorism, and we give him political asylum 6 weeks to the day after he claims political asylum. What is wrong with this picture? I'm a very big supporter of political asylum. With my family background, my family was decimated in the Holocaust because of the Nazis. I was named for my grandmother who died in the Holocaust. I was thrilled to admit political refugees into the United States when I was an immigration inspector for the first 4 years of my career with the old INS. It warmed my heart to admit a whole family into the United States. You'd see the mother and the father and the little kids, and everybody's all excited. In some cases, they were standing there crying. In other cases, they were giggling. It was very emotional for them. And I don't mind telling you, it was very emotional for me. We are at our best when we are compassionate and when we are able to provide safe haven to vulnerable people. You know, we love the underdog in America. But today, the terrorists and transnational criminals have seen in America's kindness and compassion weakness. They are turning our compassion and our kindness into a weapon that they are using against us. And we are not fighting back. We're making it ever easier. That hearing yesterday gave me more encouragement than I have had in years in terms of leadership at a very important subcommittee and at a very important committee, the House Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on Immigration over at Judiciary. We have some good leaders there. I'm really thrilled to see what they did. So for a change, where I'm usually gloom and doom, I have words of encouragement. And what I would ask you to do is reach out to members of Congress who do the right thing and let them know how you appreciate it. Let them know that they're not alone, because the pressure is on, and it is a pressure cooker in Washington. And there's a lot of slime buckets coming out of the woodwork trying to get our leaders do things that are not in America or Americans' best interests. So to see some guys stand up there and do what they did yesterday, let me tell you, it was one of those moments when you really felt pretty good. And yesterday, folks, I can tell you, Congress is ending its session on a high note. And it was a high note being played quite well by some real leaders in the House of Representatives. And it should not go unreported. That's all I can say. It should not go unreported. And that's why I decided that this evening, this was something that I needed to share with you. You know, as I've said from square one, from the first day I've been doing this radio program, this program and my efforts are about providing information that you're not seeing in the major news media. This is where I want you to come every week and join me here so that you can find out what's really going on. Because I watched TV today. There was nobody talking about that hearing yesterday. nobody talking about these issues. They'll talk about other things. You know, I know there was a tragedy, the Wichita deal, which should really serve notice on us that there's no safe place in America, you know. I did a hearing years ago, and I made the point that if no American city is safe if any American city is attacked. My objective, folks, is to try to make all of America as safe as possible. Not about xenophobia. It's about common sense. You're not antisocial if you look through the peephole before you let a stranger into your home. You're just demonstrating good common sense. And that's what we the people need to instill in those people who make a living by representing us. So if Trey Gowdy and Jason Chaffetz and Bob Goodlatte, gentlemen, if you're listening, I wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and I thank you for what you did, I guess it was yesterday. And for you, my listeners, all I could say is I look forward to seeing you at the same time, the same place next week. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. If you like the program, please tell your friends and neighbors about it. This program and all my other programs are available as podcasts on the USA Radio Network site. I'm part of that network. And I thank you for joining me. I want you all to remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. As you go about your preparations for the holidays, do a little bit of research. Take out a little bit of time. Do a little bit of reading. Have a little bit of conversations. You know, in January, they're going to be at it again with amnesty and all the other nonsense. Let's do what's best for America, what's best for our children. Let's work together as a team. I'm convinced, having watched that hearing yesterday, that we have some real strong friends in Washington. Let's give them all the support that we can. Have a great evening, everybody. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night.